Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. My name is Lucy Blue and this week I am in Egypt. Yes, I'm in Egypt conducting a coastal survey with a team of colleagues. So I thought, why not share this experience with you, and together we can explore an undiscovered Roman maritime landscape. Okay, so this week we are live from Egypt. I'm very excited. This is actually a project that I am co-directing with my colleagues from the Moorea Project in Southampton and the University of Ulster, and also my Egyptian colleagues. And I have two of them, one Egyptian, one nominally Ulster, Ziat and Nick, who have been helping, well, I say helping run the project. They've basically been running it along with Julia, who is another colleague from the University of Ulster. So this is our second season. And it was inspired by the fact that there is a massive amount of development going on in Egypt in general, but specifically along the north coast, which is where we focused our efforts. And we decided that the area that was sort of next under threat was this area more towards the Libyan border, basically from somewhere called Mersa Matru to Sidi Barani. So that's the focus of our survey. And maybe, Nick, you could just tell us a little bit about what methodological approach we've taken so far.
Okay, well, we started off looking at satellite imagery to identify sites and see exactly what is happening along the coast. And so we're looking at the range of different types of archaeology, and what is most under threat and being damaged. And so based on that reconnaissance with the satellite imagery, we've then based fieldwork around that, highlighting key sites that we need to visit, and then doing an on-the-ground assessment of those sites.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Because so Moorea is this project that is run through the University of Ulster and Southampton, and it's basically looking at endangered sites in the Middle East and North Africa. That's why we've shortened it to Moorea. But essentially, the basic approach starts with the satellite imagery. And so this project, in a way, has been really good, I think, at doing that ground truthing side of it, where we're actually starting to see what those images, the signatures of archaeology, or sometimes not archaeology, actually look like. How do you think that's... Do you think that's been a successful approach?
I think it's been very successful. And it's also something that we've learnt a lot from, because looking at satellite imagery, sometimes we're not quite sure what we're looking at. And so this survey has enabled us to also check to see whether it's a natural feature or it is archaeology. And that's something that we can only learn by being physically present at the site. And seeing the range of materials is just something that has been a great learning experience for us.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been absolutely astounded at the landscape is just full of people. I mean, people in the present, but possibly even more people in the past. I mean, there just seems to be this extensive amount of production sites in particular. And we were lucky enough to have some other experts join us, and they were able to help us a little bit and do the interpretation. But what's your feeling on that?
I'm surprised by it. And it's something we've learnt between the two seasons. Seeing some of the material in the sites meant we could go back to the satellite imagery, and we've identified even more areas. Mm. Now we know what that archaeology actually looks like, and the size of the sites is immense for a lot of it, and the scale of production is very surprising. Mm. And we're piecing together the picture along this coast now, the different types of sites and the different types of habitation and activity that's going on, and it surprised us just the variety and the amount of it.
Absolutely, the scale. And it seems to me that they're all producing and, I don't know, possibly consuming large quantities of wine. Mm-hmm. It's not normally what happens in Egypt now, is it, Ziad?
No.
From a perspective of the archaeology of Egypt, is this something that, you know, that your general archaeology lecturer in Egypt would have expected from this region?
I don't think that anybody was expecting this amount of sites, and also the wealth and the sheer size of each site. So I don't think like a lot of even archaeologists who are working currently in Egypt had previously noticed how much wealth and how many people used to live on this coastline 2,000 years ago. And it's actually amazing and astonishing to have this kind of, all this material that we gathered and all these sites that we recorded. It will add a lot more into what we understand and what we know about ancient history, especially the connection and the communication in the north of the continent, the north of Africa, between Egypt and Libya.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And do you think that's sometimes to do with the focus? I mean, maybe this is an outside looking in, although I've worked here for a few years, on that Egyptology and, you know, connection to history through the pharaohs as opposed to some of the foreign influences, should we say?
Yeah, there has been always a kind of Egyptomania about Egypt. Basically, everyone want to look for the next tomb and the next pyramid and the next ancient Egyptian artifacts. And a lot of people would discard or disregard, let's say, anything that deals with Greek, Roman, Byzantine, and mostly also Islamic archaeology in Egypt. But it's not just that, it's also the focus on the geographical areas.
Mm.
So most of the missions are focusing along the Nile Valley, especially like the Delta, the whole of the Nile Valley, maybe some in the Red Sea, but we rarely find any other missions that are working on the north coast of Egypt and also focusing on the northwestern coast of Egypt.
No, exactly. And yet, you know, we're discovering this great wealth, but also threat. I mean, that, you know, that's one of our drivers, is to try and document the sites before they get destroyed. And destruction comes in many levels, doesn't it? Many ways, doesn't it, Nick? You want to?
Yes. There's the main ones that are facing the region at the moment are the massive development. Climate change is also something that is a significant impact, and that's something we're still learning the extent of the impact along this area based on the geology and just the formation of the coastline. But a lot of the damage and the threat can also be small scale. So it might be agriculture and just housing that is being developed in the area rather than these larger scale resorts that are coming in.
So you mentioned tombs. We had quite an exciting discovery yesterday, the day before all the days merged into one. I think you had a smile on your face that day, Nick.
Yes, it was very exciting to find a series or several rock-cut tombs, probably Roman, 2,000 years ago. And they're a lot larger than we expected, even if we did find any, which we didn't expect. And the predominant one was made of two big chambers with niches cut around the second one.
That's really interesting because we've got these large production sites, and I'm going to go and talk to our pottery specialist in a minute so she can tell us a bit more about the range of the material. But do we expect, I mean, these tombs, okay, they're not decorated. Well, they're no longer decorated. I don't think they ever were. But I mean, there's it's quite an undertaking, isn't it? It's an effort. Monumental, not quite, but I mean, they're not, that's not the way that your average, you know, Roman sailor would have been buried.
Yeah.
It says something else about what these landscapes that we're looking at in a way.
Yeah, it would have been for a significant individual and family or extended family. And yeah, these are not something that we'd expect widespread for everybody. And it gives an indication of some of the hierarchy of the population in the region.
And it's also just that, you know, looking over the brow of the hill and seeing that big hole beneath you, and that sort of, ooh, there's a little bit of excitement that enters into the archaeologist, even though, of course, we are going to record it properly and be sensible about it. But but yeah, no, it makes it that little bit exciting. And so, Zia, what would you say is the highlight? You've been involved with all the logistics and sorting everything out, and just we wouldn't be here without the efficiency of Zia. Thank you. But highlights?
So one of the highlights is basically the work on the ground and seeing, like, because Nick and Julia have sent already around a map of all the sites. We've seen the satellite imagery of everything, but going there and understanding the sheer vastness of each site, that you only look on your computer screen as a very small piece of land. Some of these sites are huge. We had to walk several kilometers every day just to cover the basics or the whole ground of each site. But also working on the ground with the whole team and gaining experience from each and every individual in the team, and working across disciplines with different people from a variety of sciences all together, and of course, like, working on the ground, it's always fun for an archaeologist to work on the paperwork in the office and chase paperwork,
but
finally go in the field and work in the ground in the mud sometimes,
in
the rain other days, and in the sun other days.
We have had a bit of rain, haven't we? That's true. Some people wading through knee deep. That day wasn't so productive. But I think also it's been really nice working with the students.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the students from the Centre for Maritime Archaeology and elsewhere. We've got some are our geomorphologists. But no, it's been really nice sort of learning from them and, you know, hopefully sharing our knowledge with them as well. And just getting more people involved. I think that's you know, the only way that the future of maritime archaeology is going to move forward in this country. So actually I'm going to go and talk to some of them now. Well, obviously our professor of ceramics, but one of the students who's been helping document the site. So thank you both so much. That was really, really informative and useful, and thanks for all your help on the project as well.
Thank you for having us.
It's our pleasure.
So as I mentioned, I was also going to speak to our ceramicist, Basma, who is from the local university here in Mersa Matruh. And we're really lucky to have her because, frankly, none of us know very much about ceramics, so it's really good that we've got somebody that does. Thank you, Basma, for joining us. So our general impression is that the sites, this is very basic, like archaeology 101, the sites date from the Roman period, but obviously your understanding of the detail of the ceramics gives them a slightly more nuanced and, you know, insight. So we have a lot of sites. What sort of date range in general are you seeing?
I think the range of dating is between the 1st century AD to the 5th. Maximum, because we have a very big amount of finds. We found a lot of pieces from several sites there, and that was surprising actually to me, because I didn't expect that amount of finds. Finds are different. We have variety in size, color, also the workshop itself different. And also we have imported the ceramic from outside Egypt.
So we've got quite a large range. Are you finding, when we've found kiln sites, we've found production areas. So are you finding the majority of finds are locally produced?
The majority, yes, is local. It's local. Because this period starting from the 1st century AD to the end of the third century, it was about a very active period in history, and Egypt was like a main market. Everything preparing here and send it to Rome and to all over the world. That's why we found a lot of workshops, expecting that is workshops, yani, and kilns, and a lot of shirts show us how many they were working, like quickly and in different. Yeah, we can imagine how they how they did that time.
Yes. So you mentioned that when we were on one of the sites, because a lot of the shapes, the vessels we're finding are amphora, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So obviously they're producing, and we're also finding the vats, so for producing wine.
Yeah.
But you did mention at one point, I remember you were saying that some of these weren't so beautifully finished, if you see what I mean. So they're pumping it out, they're getting them, producing things in mass and getting it out quickly. Yeah. Is that your impression?
This period was very active in commerce, and all people in Egypt work in commerce, because gives a lot of money to them, and it's also have many ways to send the production to the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because we forget that, don't we? We think of, I mean, Egypt and the north coast of Africa in this period being producing grain, but not necessarily the quantities of wine. So we've also got Hagar, who is doing the master's course currently at the Centre of Maritime Archaeology in the University of Alexandria. And Hagar, I know she'll blush at this point, but she is a bit of a whiz kid with technology and documentation. Hagar is responsible for documenting specific features such as the outlines of buildings that we find in these coastal sites using a technique called digital GPS or global positioning system. Hagar went on to explain how this process works.
So the main station, we have two stations, the main station and the movable one. They have connection with satellite imagery and all satellites around the Earth, and they measure the distance between two stations to have more accuracy about where the point we take.
But it's amazing, because now we've got all these outlines of buildings, and we know also not where, you know, the shape of them, the rooms, the thickness of the walls, but also where they are in relation to the main site, or if they're the main site. So what sort of buildings have you been documenting?
Some of them are production sites. A lot of them are maybe houses. One of the sites have a huge building with four towers, which was, the tower is very big, and I don't know. But a lot of them we can know, because of pottery, we know there's a production site, and the other we just...
This is the other problem, isn't it? Because we're doing... You know, we're rapidly documenting these sites, and a lot of them, as we've said, I mean, we talked about large-scale threat, but I mean, there's small-scale threat, and there's bulldozing quite frequently on sites, which damages buildings. We've got a lot of problems with siltation as well. Sand, mobile sand. I mean, yesterday when we were on a site, the whole thing, there was this massive dune, wasn't it? So goodness knows what's underneath that. But in another way, it does sort of highlight how important the work we're doing is, she says, waving her own flag. But I mean, in terms of trying to document these other sites before they get threatened and destroyed. But the other thing we've also been doing is photogrammetry and photography.
To connect later on the points, so you won't have a whole version of the site. But photogrammetry gives you a quick result.
Yeah.
So when he do photogrammetry for the building, he found that one of the walls are outside. Moving outside the whole building. It's rectangular, but this one is like, where are you going?
Yeah, where are you going? This is the problem though, isn't it? Because it's difficult. But in a way, that's what we do though, isn't it? We take lots of parts of the puzzle and we put it all together.
Yeah.
You know, you take the photograph, the digital GPS, the plans, the satellite imagery, the ceramics, and then we sort of piece it all together to make a bigger picture.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned the documentation you've been doing of the pottery. So we bring selected pieces back, how do you make those selections?
Actually, we choose the different and unique pieces which reflect a sign to us to reveal a part of of history hidden in our mind. So we choose in some sites we collect all over the site, and we collect a big quantity just to emphasize the idea of that there was a huge production here with no specific or unique element or features on the pottery. On the other side, other sites, we make selection because we have a lot and they are really rich in features.
Well, thank you both so much. I really, I mean, not just for the interview, but also pleasure, for all the work you've done on the project.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. That's my team. Excellent work conducted by all this season. And thanks to the support of the DUA, the Department for Underwater Antiquities, and the local Mersema True Antiquities Department. One thing I forgot to mention, though, was harbours. That's my specialist subject. The key to accessing all these amazing production sites. Well, the reality is that's because we have found regrettably very few, and we fear that actually the main harbour site in the region beyond Mersema True itself has actually being developed as a new port site in the region. So hopefully we'll have a bit more success with locating the harbours next season. But again, thanks for listening to the Dive and Dig podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the development of maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean.